as I started making beers, I wanted to, you know, name beers after things that I thought were cool in whatever philosophical tradition. Names, you know, beer names that might cause someone to hop on Wikipedia and go down a rabbit hole.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the un-Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. And in the case of this podcast, drink. I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com. And I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick, dining editor at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm a little stuffy.
But she's aside a little from under that, the weather.
A little bit.
All under the weather. It's garbage. Yeah. It is garbage month in Milwaukee, a.k.a. March.
Yeah.
The worst of all the months, unless you're a college basketball fan.
So, although it was beautiful earlier today, the sun was out.
You know, it's a reasonable temperature. But then you dip your head down to look at the ground, and it's just all brown and slush and dead grass and litter that has been saved up for months under snow.
You're the most positive person ever.
These are the two worst months of the year. When I become president, my first act will be to remove March and February from the calendar. They are garbage months, and they look and smell like butt. My second act as president will be to make our two guests the official beer of America.
There we go.
Perfect transition.
Okay,
you guys have done this before, haven't you?
I'll support the second half of this. Yes, absolutely. So, in case you haven't already guessed, you know, because you may have.
Because you probably clicked on the play button and you saw the link that had like the names of our guests on it. Yeah. So hopefully you know who the guests are.
But we're here with Tommy Vandervoort and James Larson from Enlightened Brewing Company. And they're here to talk beer because...
And
you know,
soccer, because we found out in the preamble before this that are both of you soccer fans or just James?
I think there's one resident soccer fan here, and it is not Tommy.
Yeah.
He has not been radicalized yet into loving soccer.
I mean, I'm a soccer curious. I'm very interested. I like following it when James is getting into it, but there's so much I don't know.
I mean, Tommy did say, hey, I know that player. And he's like, yeah, which one? Oh, number 42, the one with all the tattoos. I'm like, okay, well, thanks for the number. They all have all the tattoos.
You know, number totally nine.
Yeah, number nine. Yeah. The number 10. Yeah. I like the number 10.
We're going to get him to know Messi. Let's just, by end of this episode, we're going to lock it into his head. He will know who Lionel Messi is.
Yeah. Well, I'd be surprised if he doesn't, because we did a beer challenge through the World Cup, and Messi... space was on pretty much every beer.
That's the perfect thing to talk about, I think, in this episode is, I'm sure we'll get there, but we did this really fun kind of beers around the world thing for the World Cup.
Oh, that is cool.
Awesome. That's really cool. So I assume an Argentinian style. What would be the styles of beer?
So,
we might as well just go right at it.
Yeah,
sure.
We'll get into some other stuff later. So this was one of my friends' kind of ideas, and he wanted to get a beer for every country in the World Cup. And this year was particularly difficult because there are some countries in the World Cup that you get thrown in jail for having a beer.
Do not partake.
So we had to do some kind of workarounds for some of the countries we couldn't get beers on. So we would look at
Morocco was one that I imagine was difficult because I don't think it's illegal there, but they just don't drink much beer, if I remember.
Yeah. That Iran,
I was going to say any Muslim company.
Yeah,
you have less drinking going on over
there. The host nation.
We were following all that news pretty closely about Budweiser and that just gigantic sponsorship being in, being out. Yeah. You know, can you drink beer in these areas or not? That was pretty wild.
It was a very weird World Cup. So which ones did you all end up, how many did you
we got a decent amount of beers from the countries or representing the countries, and then we did some NA stuff from the more Muslim countries, which was funny. And then if we couldn't find anything, you know, maybe some of the more African countries where they don't necessarily export any of their beer, we would go for their most consumed beer. So there was, you know, some Guinness, some I think Budweiser was in there.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you find any new favorites? Like, were there any beers that you were like, we should have this around all the time?
I don't know. I don't think there was anything we didn't really have before. A lot of it was macro stuff. You know, what was available.
So I was going to say, what you can actually get. In a reasonable period of time.
It's a shame Aruba didn't make the World Cup, because then we could have had that delicious balashi chill on tap.
Yeah.
There were some fun wild ones. I would say, if anything, it got me back to like revisiting maybe some more macro beers that I hadn't had in a long time. And I found out that the giant can of Foster's beer really can hit the spot on the right day.
The green can, not the blue can.
What's the difference? What's the green can?
The green can is like the Foster's, like you would get on draft, like the premium Pilsner. Okay. And I think the green can is more like, I don't know. I want to say it's more of a flavorful beer.
Australia sends like the bilge water in the blue can to us, and then they hoard the green can back home.
Back at Lee Foster's.
You were saying, because you guys hosted World Cup parties and kind of watch events, and it was pretty successful, you said.
We just did the final.
Just the final.
So we kind of were thinking about doing some other stuff, but I actually went out to raise to guest bartend for the the USA England game
in the Growler Gallery.
Yeah, so
which
Rob's
is
a good
great
friend.
Little bar.
Yeah,
massive plug for the Raise Growler Gallery.
Yeah.
Very delightful spot.
Rob's a good friend of ours who runs the spot, and you know, we wouldn't be a company without him. And he knows that I'm a soccer fan. We played soccer together, and he also knows that I'm a dual citizen. So I couldn't lose the game because my mom's from London. It was England, USA.
Let's go
do it. Let's do a little mini.
Who are you rooting for most in that game?
If I'm going to be honest, it's not going to be a popular answer, because I kind of wanted to see England go through, because I think they looked better on paper. I think the U.S. is building. So that's my
agreed. And I have an even less popular take, both with the World Cup and with the Olympics, is I don't like rooting for America. Because the thing is, I feel like, especially like, or like with hockey, like I always root for the Canadian teams in the playoffs. Like it's not our sport. We like came to hockey later. Like soccer is like America's fifth favorite sport. All these other countries love and praise soccer, and the United States is like, it treats it like a cute hobby. And it's like, I would much rather, you know, a country that cares move on rather than America that's like, oh no, we kind of do this on the side. Oh, that's fun. We made it to the round of 16. How weird.
But maybe that's the turning point, Matt.
I was going to say, you know, the flip side of that coin is that we could get more fans into it. I mean, I know I'm more into it after really not having followed it.
It just feels like pretending like the Kentucky Wildcats in basketball are an underdog. Like, it just doesn't seem right to be like, oh, I'm rooting for that underdog United States of America.
Yeah, right.
But it's a fun sport. I'm glad you guys are into it. That's fascinating. You're a dual citizen.
Yeah. Yep. I am.
So born there, moved here.
Nope.
Born here, moved there.
Born here, and you know, thankfully, you know, the governments of the United States and Great Britain are pals, and so all I needed to do was apply for my British passport before the age of 13, and I can renew it for the rest of my life and be a dual citizen. Actually, my mom just naturalized as a citizen a couple of years ago, and found out that she. Since you know she has me and my sister, is also eligible for dual citizenship. So
we
all have two passports. Well, James Bond action.
Do you think your love of beer and brewing came from having that kind of, you know, the pub culture kind of around and in the DNA?
I think so. I mean, we would go over there all the time. You know, I basically grew up in a pub. I remember having my first beer as a Grolsch in a family wedding, and someone gave me a little half pint of Grolsch, and you know, you go back for a little more and having fun.
That's a good beer. That's a good beer to start with, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. Nice and easy.
Yeah, it's a lot better than most Americans whose first beer is like a Natty Light.
It's not far off. We had a Grolsch in the World Cup beer, and it was about what you'd expect. So.
Yeah, that was fun. Again, the pop top bottle, though, the swing top thing is always fun, and it's a pretty bottle and decent liquid inside.
It's got some class. It's got some class to it. Now, Tommy, for you, are you also a dual citizen, or are you?
I am. What's your origin story? I'm a dual citizen of Oak Creek, Wisconsin, and Bayview, Milwaukee. I grew up here. I've lived in Wisconsin pretty much my whole life. For a little while, we were down in Texas for my dad's job, in El Paso, and yeah, so we were down there. I think I'm not so good at my geography as an enlightened brewing person. I should be, maybe, but I think Ciudad Juarez was right across the border. My parents would talk about back in those days, this would have been late 80s. You know, they could just wander back and forth without question, really. It kind of acted as almost one metropolitan area. But I don't remember that. I was really young. And we moved back up here shortly after. So I grew up in Oak Creek, and I've lived in Bayview now last, 10, 11 years.
So you also then grew up with a little bit of that, you know, a different type of bar / pub culture, if you will.
it's just in Wisconsin. Yeah,
it's true. Right. It's, it's in the Milwaukee DNA. There's no doubt about it. My uncle growing up had a basement bar. They shared like this duplex situation with my grandma and grandpa. So that's where family parties were. They were in the downstairs bar, you know, playing games on one side and having like a little fireplace and bar on the other side.
I feel like everybody here has.
We had enough room. Like so, bar. Yeah, it was a lot of cribbage. And that's where I have a love for cribbage. We do a weekly cribbage night at the brewery. And it's like I'm just so proud and like in love with the game, and we can do it here, and it's packed on Wednesday nights, so that's been really fun. But we would also do, you know, Twister and like whatever holiday family games.
No Sheepshead, right?
I never really I've played Sheepshead, but I'm not up to snuff on it. I don't remember how to play.
Kind of like soccer. Sheepshead is a little complex.
You know, that's a little embarrassing, actually. I should know how to play it. It's the opposite
of soccer. Soccer is very uncomplex. Soccer is very easy. It's more like football than
ish. But it's a lot to watch and pay attention to. In Lori's defense,
I have never played a hand of cribbage, but I grew up playing Sheepshead. Yeah.
We were a sheep's head family as well.
Yeah, cribbage. And I'll even things out. I was a cribbage. We were a cribbage family. So.
There you go. Now we got a whole new team.
I was going to say, it does feel like cribbage is having a moment right now. I was just at the Fermentorium the other day, and there was like a random couple playing cribbage like on a Thursday night or something like that.
It feels like it's part of the kit that you have to have at a brewery. You got to have some cribbage boards and some Dex cards.
If they're a proper, proper Milwaukee local brewery, they got to have that cribbage board just on standby.
Well, we passed that test. We got probably 30 boards at the brewery.
Oh my God. They're just everywhere. They're everywhere.
but James, you're ahead of most British folk if you know how to play Sheepshead.
Oh, I didn't say I know how to play. I just said I grew up playing.
But you've at least heard of it.
So. My dad's taken all my money for years growing up. Got trauma because of Sheepshead, I think.
Yeah. In college, I dated a guy who worked at a bookstore in Madison, and he worked with a British colleague, and they were stocking like the shelves. You know, there's that whole game section, you know, and they had books coming in on the rules of Sheepshead. And he picks up this book and he's going to the British colleague, and he's like shelving it. And he's like, what is this? And Alex is like, well, this is a card game, right? And he's like, it's called Sheep Shit. So throughout, I guess, my older
years,
what
you call it when you're bad.
Whenever we talked about Sheep's Head, it was always Sheep Shit. Anyway.
So we know your individual origin stories. So then how did you two come together? And how did enlightened become your baby?
Well, like James said, this is my line I like to say is, like any great relationship, we met at a bar. Some Milwaukee thing. And everything.
So which bar was this? Does it still exist?
When Rob Zellermeyer, who's now at Ray's Growler Gallery, as we mentioned, was working at the Sugar Maple.
Oh, that's for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is they're about to celebrate 15 years as the Sugar Maple, coming up in April. So that's pretty exciting.
Prost to the Sugar Maple.
Well, and you guys are almost 10 years old.
We're doing this year. Been in business 10 years, which is
I literally spent a better part of that decade drinking in your anyway.
In the various spots, the tap rooms.
But not to try.
Yeah, so Rob Zellermeyer was working at Sugar Maple. I was living across the street at the time, and I was working on the brewery, basically just had this glorified homebrew set up, and I was making a lot of beer and sharing it with friends, bringing it into Sugar Maple. And trying to make a real go of it. And James at the time was finishing up his master's degree in brewing and distilling, but then started working at Bell's in Michigan, but was regularly coming back to Milwaukee. And, you know, I never worked at a commercial brewery. I didn't have any commercial production experience, and I needed a hand. I needed knowledge and expertise, because I was in the service industry side of things. So talked to Rob a lot about that, and he knew that, and he knew James from James coming into Sugar Maple. So it was just like a natural connection to be made.
He was like, here's the guy from UC Davis. Over to this side of the bar.
You know, I tip my hat to UC Davis, but I went to Harriet Watt University, actually.
Oh, shoot. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bad memory on my part. But
no, that's fine.
A lot of Davis alums in Milwaukee.
There's a lot of Davis, not so many Harriet Watt.
No,
I think
the
only
other
Harriet Watt guy might be, State Line Distillery? Yeah. The guy went there.
Right.
A couple years ahead of me,
but. Yeah. I know. Yeah. You're no slough.
Yeah. Well,
so. You know. Yeah. That's how we got started. That was circa, you know, just about 2012 or something. Well, I guess we didn't really meet till 2014, but you know, I incorporated the business in 2013. So that's where we get the 10 year, you know, anniversary that we're celebrating this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys just hit it off.
We didn't get along. No, we didn't like each other. No,
we fought for a solid 5 years before we really started getting along.
But you know, James is a lot grumpier.
I think I've rounded some edges in the last few years. You know,
we both have.
And I thought it was just that I got to know you. So you know you.
That might be it too. Yeah. Pretty thorny before you.
We've each affected each other, I think. And I'm more grumpy and James is less grumpy. We've tempered each other's spirits.
Yeah. Totally not my fault.
Yeah. No. But you do, it is sort of like a marriage though, where I do think you sort of rub off on each other, and hopefully it's the good parts, you know. I mean, Tommy,
that sentence wasn't great, Lori. You should have really thought about the nouns and verbs.
We got to throw a flag on this one, Lori.
Not say rubbing off.
The double entendre, Lori.
I hope this stays in.
I was not thinking of that.
I almost said it. Just so you know, I almost said your exact words. So I had to catch myself. Yes. It's a huge industry, beer, and people come at it from a lot of different angles. You know, I was the bartender, craft beer fan, homebrewer side of things, and James started making beer like way early on.
When he was like 8, around the time he got.
And he had the full beard at the time, actually, so he knew it was his destiny, I think, to make beer. But yeah, I mean, you were homebrewing way before I was.
Yeah, then, I always said that they didn't make fake IDs for redheads, so I had to start making beer. I started brewing at 18. I failed out a lot of college classes at UWM because I was like, I'm going to be a brewer. Well, go be an organic chemist. Yeah, no, that's way too hard. Well, then go be an engineer. Yeah, that's still way too hard. What do you got? Business marketing. Don't go to class, still pass. Nice.
There you go. Yeah. So you guys ended up with kind of an interesting agreement then. Because, well, James, you were brewing more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you ended up with a brewing slot.
Mm-hmm.
Was that in at least in part because of the knowledge you brought regarding scale? And
yeah, I think, you know, when we first started, you know, I was already in brewing, production brewing. You know, I had come out of grad school, I had gone to Bell's, I had worked there. I always like to, you know, give a shout out because I learned just as much working for Bell's in the short time I was there that I did, you know, in
and you, and you worked for Bell's when they were like getting to be really good.
Yeah, it was like, a sweet spot. Yeah, they were still kind of small. I think, they weren't small. They were the seventh largest craft brewery in the nation. They were doing 370,000 barrels a year. You know, it was fun. It was great. But I was moonlighting back here on the weekends because I was living out of my car. So that wasn't super fun, but I was working back here and then kind of, you know, talking with Rob, talking with Tommy. And then I decided it was just, you know, it was time to move on and get something else going. Walked into Rumpus Room where Tommy was working and said, "Hey, I'm back, you know, for a little while, you know, let's brew, let's do this. I can walk in and get it set up." Not even thinking I was going to stick around, just like, "Hey, you guys need some help. Here I am. Let's do it. You're a friend of Rob's. I'm a friend of Rob's." And nice. That's the, you know, that's the end of it, kind of.
That's it. The yeah. end and the beginning. So
then it was like, yeah, let's keep helping them out. Let's keep cleaning those tanks.
And I still remember, now, you were in that little legendary room.
Yeah.
In the Lincoln warehouse, that tiny little room where barely a brewing kit will fit.
Oh, yeah, it's unreal. I can't, I mean, it was literally 500 square feet. You know, that's like, that's small.
No tap room. We didn't have a tap room.
Right. No tap room. I was just in there recently. The fourth brewery to exist in that space is there now, Torzala Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did a collaboration with them, which was really fun, with Torzala, Component Brewing, Eagle Park, and Enlightened, because we had all shared time in that space or whatever. We all used that space to get started. And it feels much bigger in there, actually. He's kind of gone vertical. He got some ceiling height. So he was, he put, you know, the right kind of shelving. He's got it dialed in there. It's looking really nice.
Nice.
Four times the charm.
People get smarter, maybe taller.
Yeah.
You know, there's just like a lot of knowledge and infrastructure and so much baked into that space. But each brewery's got to make it their own and use it how they want to use it. And it's just really cool to
Everybody
see.
Everybody leaves a little bit of yeast behind. So the
it's
beer
true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funkier yeast, and funkier.
Black mold. No.
Well,
they ripped that cooler out, Tommy. Don't worry.
It was a cooler that we built that, I don't know. That's all I should say.
Yeah. I think we leave it there.
I was going to say.
It's all been remediated.
It's clean. It's a clean space.
Indeed.
And so how long were you in the little room?
You were there for an eternity.
Longer than most, actually, I think.
Let's call it, 3 years, just about.
Okay.
And we moved downstairs to the first floor of the Lincoln warehouse and opened that in July of 2016. So yeah, we were in there about 3 years and then Eagle Park moved in shortly after that. But all said and done, we were in the Lincoln warehouse, I think for 7 years, 7 full years in that building.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I remember when Eagle Park moved in, because they were always hauling band equipment. You know what Eagle Park, what the Eagle Park folks showed up. Because they all played instruments. They were
like a family band, weren't they?
I don't remember what
they were. They were in a band. I heard this story. They, his name is, I think, Sean Hofstetler or something. He runs Hollow Street Studios. I think that's the name of it. But at the time, before Eagle Park moved in there, he had a studio in the Lincoln Warehouse. So Eagle Park had been there to record their band early on. And yeah, so there was tons of that kind of stuff going on in that building, too. It was,
yeah.
It was a mixed, eclectic bag. It still is.
Yeah. And you guys were there and Bittercube was there and it was this sort of, and then Twisted Path moved in there and for a little moment. Well, I guess it's still, there's still a few beverage companies in there because Twisted Path is still there.
Yeah, now there's
and
two breweries.
There's a space in your former space. Like, yeah?
This is a club. So now club. There's,
three,
like,
no, there's three breweries.
Three.
Yeah,
I think there's three breweries.
Forgot about New Parents
in there currently, and
you cut that part out.
Maybe there was. Well, there's a coffee shop, and but yeah, at the time it was us and Twisted Path and Bitter Cube and Top Note Tonics and Now
Beverage
I'm wondering
Coalition.
If there is like a kombucha company in there. I don't recall.
I think so. I haven't
Barons
been over there.
Is still in there.
Yeah, New Barons.
I think New Barons
Co-op
is in the space where Enlightened was most recently.
They took over a lot of our
before
equipment.
You moved to your big
which was great.
Quarters. But we don't need it. We don't need to rest there. so you guys eventually you moved downstairs into what was ostensibly a huge space in comparison.
Yeah.
But which you pretty quickly outgrew.
Yeah, that really
we
didn't
only in there
take too much time either. even though
year?
I did feel like, you know, huge at the time, I guess, just compared to where we had come from. Yeah, we moved down there and we ran that tap room for 2 or 3 years before transitioning over here to the Louis Alice building and opening our current brewery and tap room. For a little while, we had this, we ran the old Lincoln Warehouse tap room as kind of a Wisconsin beer bar. And then COVID hit and it was just like not possible to manage two spots with two different concepts, even though they were right down the street. So I give a lot of credit to people in bars and restaurants that can manage, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 across the state or whatever.
In fairness, though, we were trying to run them as
those are
production brewery and a pilot brewery.
And I think a lot of people did, you know, kind of score down at that point. But we didn't really answer. So you guys, Enlightened Brewing came from this sort of philosophical perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I knew that.
And I remember thinking, oh, look at that. They're so smart. just from
us?
The perspective, you know, the perspective that you came with and the, you know, every beer had this like very philosophical story behind it. And I guess let's talk about that. How has that stuck? How has that kind of evolved?
It has changed a lot. And it's one of those things that maybe James has tempered my nerdiness or something early on. So my undergrad degree is philosophy and political science. And I was just so curious about everything, history and how. And then once I got into beer, the intersection between all that stuff and beer was like really fun to explore. And as I started making beers, I wanted to, you know, name beers after things that I thought were cool in whatever philosophical tradition. Names, you know, beer names that might cause someone to hop on Wikipedia and go down a rabbit hole for an hour, just looking into the name, why we named it that, and where all the rest of that came from. When I was in college, we had a group of friends that we called the Enlightened Imbibers. So that was the original name of the brewery, was the Enlightened Imbiber. But I was going through all the permit applications and just, you know, paperwork, formal stuff, and nobody could say imbiber. It was like a really confusing word for people. It was like imbiber? I got imbiber a lot. Imbiber, yeah. And I thought like maybe we should streamline this thing. And I guess that all kind of that's what kicked it off, simplifying things a little bit more. But I mean that's an important like intellectual pursuit as well, as just taking complicated things and sort of condensing them into the, you know, the prime idea, or at least communicating that in a simple, effective way. But this group of friends we called the Enlightened Imbibers would go to Roman's Pub in Bayview, and we just talk about all that stuff that was like off limits, I guess you might say, in polite conversation, just politics and, you know, big debates of the day. But we would always, the reason we were gathering was to try new beer and talk about it and just have fun doing that. So that group kind of sparked the idea for the name Enlightened Brewing Company. And we still, I don't want to say that we've deviated from it, but like I said, we've simplified a little bit so that the names are understandable to people, beer names. And it's more just about a spirit of curiosity, and we try to be clever, and we like punning, and we just enjoy, you know, deep thoughts and talking about big ideas and having friendly debates, maybe not so friendly, but sometimes, it's all about, you know, it's all around beer, craft beer, and this space that we have here to gather, get together and talk about all that kind of stuff.
We're getting back there though, right? Yeah.
So jeez, what? as you look back at like 10 years, I don't know. I'm eager to hear some of your favorite stories. But the question always comes around, like, would you do it the same way? You know? Or what would you change? Because people have really different, you know, you two probably both have really different responses to that.
Yeah, I think I was going to give James. James the chance to jump in. I felt like I was just dominating the conversation.
I'm actually curious to hear what you have to say first.
I really feel like, and maybe this is a sort of philosophical approach to it, but I really feel like we're still in it and figuring it out now, even though we've been around for 10 years. We're still pretty small in the grand scheme, and we've gone through this startup phase, you know, taking it from hobby to more formal business, and then being established for a little bit of time and trying to grow that. It's hard to say because we're still learning and always figuring it all out. One thing I do appreciate is just getting to know other brewers in the city, in the industry, talking to them about their kind of origin story, how they got started, what their angle in starting up was, what they wanted out of, you know, starting a brewery from the get-go, and has that changed? You know, because people have started out much bigger than us and much smaller than us. But all we know is kind of where we started and where we are now. Would we do it differently? I don't think so, because the way that we did it was the only way we felt like, feel like we did it this way because that was the only way we could get it done, was to start really small, figure it out as we went along, and then take, you know, chewable, bite-sized bits of growth as we went. And I mean, everybody, of course, any business would want to start up with more money, more toys, you know, bigger tanks, fancy equipment. But I appreciate the kind of bootstrapping that we've done over the years, and we can take a lot of pride in that. And I think people that drink our beer notice that and kind of know our story and appreciate that. So that's like a really good feeling.
Yeah.
I don't think we could do it any other way, to Tommy's point. If somebody asked us if we would do it, yes, of course, we would go and find Mr. Moneybags and we would have that person give us, you know, $500 million and we would get it all set up.
That changes things though, right?
Like, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Sure does.
But I think additionally to Tommy's point, I think we have kind of what I would consider a true craft story. You know, when you think of, you know, the founding fathers or founding folks, so to speak, of craft beer, you think of, you know, the Sierra Nevadas that are out of a storage locker. You think of the lakefront breweries that are, you know, out of a tiny little place in Riverwest. You think of these, you know, small, you know, bootstrapped ideas, people that just have to make it work with what they've got. And while we're still, like Tommy said, in the meat of that, that's kind of the fun. That's what we get to do every day is wake up and go, oh, what problem do we have now? Our drain hose is getting smaller. Well, let's figure out a better way to use it because we can't buy a new one.
Those Japanese tanks that we bought.
Oh, yeah. My. God. We've had just like, we should get like a, I don't know, I feel like a professional like writer, so like a biographer or something for that, because there's just so many stories that when we're kicking it around talking about it.
There are none of those here. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, just so many projects that we've had to do and figure out. And like James said, just challenges that come up that are completely out of left field, totally unexpected. But it's not unique to craft beer, but it is very craft beer kind of spirit where you're just going to figure it out to the best of your ability, learn about it and, you know, take care of it and try to fix it.
It's sort of in the name, that crafty.
Yeah, craft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
what,
I think
that's what it was.
It's true.
That.
It's like so much of what we do.
Thought it was like artisan.
Yeah.
Craft, right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's start an artisan brewery next time, Tommy.
There are plenty of artisan ales out there.
That's,
you know,
true.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think they've got it figured out, but we don't.
Yeah, they don't tell you when you sign up for the craft part that just means you got to be a little bit more creative. Well, that has me thinking, and I do for sure want to get your perspective kind of on the world of beer in Milwaukee, because I know when you guys, and I would say kind of when you opened your tasting room downstairs in the Lincoln Warehouse, I mean, things at that point were like blowing up like crazy. I mean, there was a brewery opening. I was covering breweries at that point, and there was a brewery that opening like every month. and I remember thinking it was crazy. And the weird thing to me, and I don't say that it's weird in a bad way, but is most of them are still here. Mm. Like when you talk breweries, like, granted it's alcohol versus food. But you talk like breweries and restaurants, and I've watched lots, like plenty more restaurants, like come and go. But in the brewery world, I mean, we've really only lost a couple.
I think a lot of the brewery stuff is extremely community driven. I know that restaurants can be that way as well, but a lot of people will travel more often for restaurants. You know, everybody wants to try the new place they'll go, but they want to keep their local brewery open, their neighborhood brewery open. Now, Bayview's got a lot of them, but I think we have some sort of like OG status, like legacy status, being the older one. We've got a great space, but I think that does contribute to Milwaukee's, you know, thankfully not a big closure list on the Brewers Association annual list of closures, and I hope that continues. I really do, but it's a hard climate out there for everybody. So hopefully people still go out, support their local brewery, go and travel and try some other breweries. But
And it's interesting because that community is probably super key, because craft beer certainly has been a hard market as far as like retail goes. You know, people thought, oh, well, like we'll grow, get into retail, and then we'll be kind of set. But it's like to get shelf space has become, you know, I mean, you talk about kind of saturation and like who's controlling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult to be seen.
It's different now, but back maybe when I started drinking craft beer, and even earlier when, as James said, some of the founding fathers and mothers of craft beer were getting started, the battle for shelf space was all with macro. And I remember, you know, a section of a liquor store being kind of Stone and Rogue and Sierra Nevada and all those great breweries that had wider distribution. But the whole other side of the store is Miller and Budweiser, and not just, you know, not just one, not just Miller Lite, but Miller Lite in 8 ounce, 12 ounce, 16 ounce cans, bottles. I mean, yes. So that
Miller
was Lite, the battle
Miller
for
Genuine Draft.
Yeah,
it's just craziness. Right. Miller Lite.
Yeah, yes. And that's how they sort of gobbled up like a bunch of shelf space. That's changed, I think. I mean, obviously all those package formats are probably still around, but stores maybe have adapted a little bit more.
Well, and did it change a little bit too with the kind of the macro breweries kind of pivoting so much towards seltzers and these canned cocktails? Or
that's they a also good point, I guess. Craft. I mean, right, they all started all their little. I mean, because I think
they
that
did,
came
but they
beforehand.
A lot of those really fast. Like,
I think they, you know, those brands are still around, and the big breweries that have bought up, you know, smaller breweries to build like their craft portfolio, that's, they've given some shelf space to that, which is just interesting. And then also, yeah, them making ready to drink cocktails and hard seltzers and that kind of stuff. They've already got all this shelf space, so it's just kind of like plug and play a little bit, I think. But on the other side of things, now it's, there's other craft breweries, people that maybe started the way that we started and like got really big and are from other states or something, sort of battling it out for other shelf space. And that, I don't know if that was always the case back when. It was sort of craft fighting micro, but now there's a little bit more, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, the shelves haven't grown that much. You know, a lot of these stores are the same size. So
I
don't envy the job.
Eventually it was craft fighting craft that for the larger section in the store that it ended up with.
Yeah, it all comes down to like end caps and, you know, prominent placements and things like that. And that's just part of the, this is part of the job. You got to figure out that stuff. We, you know, you want beer moving, you want it selling, and you want it fresh. So you got to pay attention to that kind of stuff. But I still have this like sense of wonder. I think James does too. Just seeing our beer in the wild is such a trip at any store. So seeing somebody like pick up a 6-pack of Cream City Bricks and take it home. Like I recently went to Odd Duck for dinner. I have two kids, so like nights out are a little bit more rare. So I went there for the first time in a little while recently, and it was such a good time. We sat at the bar and had an awesome dinner, but I saw cans of Cream City Bricks like going out the service station at Odd Duck, and I was just blown away. So we have that, we still have that, that sense of wonder. It's really amazing, but you got to think about these other things, shelf space and cold storage and all that is definitely part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and when you look back, I mean, it's funny because, you know, you were self-distributing, you know, I think you particularly, Tommy, like, you know, James
yeah,
is in
James
the,
did plenty
James
of
is struggling
the,
with his tanks.
James is moving around three barrels of beer.
Did you all? Yeah. We all drove around.
Because you did that for James a good was, long time.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so fun. We were, you know, like, if we you know, start, if we sold our first keg in 2014 or something, we didn't have any kind of distribution agreement until 2019.
Were you forced to do that based on growth? Or did was that mostly a time and energy?
Yeah,
decision?
it was capacity and just growing and not really thinking that we could handle distributing. I mean,
we can handle it,
but it's
we need the distributor for the amount of like cans and kegs that are going out. And the footprint that we have now is not something that Tommy and I could drive around and meet any number of the accounts that we're getting to.
Breweries can do that, but you got to invest a bunch of time and money into vehicles and people and just kegs, you know, like all this logistics stuff. The distributor, that's what they do. They're experts at it. Mm-hmm. And there are options. Luckily for us, you know, we can talk to different distributors and kind of catch their attitude, or just gauge how they approach the industry and all that. And then make a choice, which is what we did. And it's been great. It's less backbreaking, although there's still plenty of backbreaking work around the brewery, but just less, you know, hauling kegs out of half barrels out of James's beat up Mercedes.
Yeah, that car is dead now. It's gone forever.
Dead and gone. Yeah. R.I.P.
So yeah. So in 2019 when you moved?
2019 we started working.
Because you guys were one of the places where I remember thinking when the pandemic hit, gosh, they haven't been there long enough. Like, you know, people were just starting to find you, I think.
Yeah, that was a hard one. Because we were looking at, you know, people starting to get it, starting to see the space. And, the tap room is, you know, it's open, it's big, it's got old infrastructure, sawtooth, you know, skylights and garage doors and all sorts of cool plants. And then all of a sudden we're having great numbers in the tap room and wholesale is going well. And then it's, hey, you guys better stop working. Like, oh no, what are we going to do?
One of the things I've learned though is that's just been really interesting to learn about is like the place of craft beer or like a production brewery with a tap room in a city and in the state and in the like, you know, the chain, the supply chain, the retail chain of things of alcohol. And luckily, I feel like we were a little bit better positioned than a lot of bars and restaurants were because we already had this packaged thing that we could send out the door through distribution. Yeah. And it just kind of changed like our split. You know, we make a tank of beer and we got to figure out how much of this liquid is going to go into cans, how much is going to go into kegs, and what's going to be for the tap room and what's going to be for distribution. And so that whole calculus just changed during COVID, but like, thankfully we had an option to get out there and sell some stuff. And that's talking about distribution. I mean, we were super glad that we had a relationship set up already because it helped us weather that storm without a doubt. But yeah, we weren't open that long when COVID, we didn't have a full year under our belts when COVID kicked off. And that was a crazy time. We just still, everybody I'm sure has just PTSD from that. And
yeah, well, because nobody knew what to do. I mean, I think everybody has, you know, looking at it now, we're like 3 years out from that and everybody's looking back and, you know, kind of feels like, well, we figured it out, right? But I remember months when, you know, I remember when they were saying, oh, this will be over in 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty comical.
Honestly, that was like, let's battle it out and everybody can stay home and we'll knock this thing out. And then just be, we'll be back to normal by summer, you know?
And the bread craze. What was with the bread craze? I never understand. All of a sudden, everybody was making sourdough bread.
Yeah, it's funny to look back at the stuff we like did and watched. Like, do you remember when we just like beat the hell out of pans and dishes to like say thank you to like first responders? Just like, what a weird thing we all decided to be a good gesture. Like someone asked me the other day, like, have you watched Outer Banks season 3? And I was like, that show is so entrenched as a pandemic watch for me that I cannot.
I can't go back there, man. I won't do it.
I think that's why Tiger King season 2 bombed. It's like, everyone's like, I know exactly where I was when I watched that first season and I don't want to go back there.
Well, not to mention that the first season was painful enough.
It wasn't a good documentary. And the first one was perfect.
I watched the entire thing. I like binge watched Cheer. I think that was the name of the show, right? That was a COVID thing for me. And I was like,
what?
I've never done gymnastics. I've never been a cheerleader.
We watched like, that what? Too. That's
but
weird.
I was just riveted by it. So
Tommy, you know that they're recording this, right?
Oh, is it? Yeah. Are we live?
It's okay. I think eventually you felt like you were running out of things to watch because nobody was making much. You know what I mean? A lot of things stalled.
Like I was running, like Netflix was like every week just like throwing things at us, just like being like,
well, I will say I probably watched more television than I normally do.
Well, now it's funny because all the streaming services are like, what do you mean? Yeah. What do you mean growth isn't continuing? What do you mean having a hostage audience for a year maybe made us confused about what our estimates should be? Right.
Yeah. I will say, like, though, I benefited
like the sourdough
from that
trend. You know,
yeah, that bread,
all of that
bread
was
craze.
Just time. It was just that people had time, you know, and you see what other people are doing. You're like, oh, I've always wanted to do that. And I think, you know, and that's one of those weird practical things that is pretty intriguing to people who cook, is like, this takes attention that I don't have. I mean, I've had sourdough starters over the years and I've kept them going for sometimes 3-4 years at a time, but they were always like, since I took this job, which keeps me busy pretty much 24/7, I don't make sourdough bread. I don't have time. I don't have hours, you know, to let it do its thing on the counter.
I keep my yeast work at work, you know.
Your yeast would kill the other yeast too.
Amazing.
Yeah. Part of the bread thing is that it's a way to do something, but also not do something. Because a lot of it is like just letting it sit around.
Yeah.
Yes, and no.
Like, it was a way of like, oh, look, I look at all I accomplished. And it's like, you mixed some things. And you let yeast do its job.
It's your new pet.
You gotta feed it. You gotta take care of it.
It's not that easy.
Like, it's also like, it's not like people were like.
Well, I feel like it was more like a competition because sourdough is not easy because you are relying on wild yeast and you have to pay attention to temperature and time. I mean, you gotta get a little geek about it, or honestly, sourdough is going to be the biggest bomb of bread. You know, that you'll ever try to make.
And that's why that trend died.
because unless you're dedicated to it, it's a little like beer.
Do you remember the cake trend when people kept decorating cakes to look like things and then would cut into them and everyone on the internet would performatively freak out about it?
I think there's a show now called Is It Cake or Not or something
Netflix
like that.
Netflix made a whole TV show out of it. Yeah.
I watched the first episode without reading anything or knowing anything. Didn't understand the show. I didn't know they were going to make like shoes cake,
that
and somebody was going to have to figure it out. I thought it was like, oh yeah, no, that's cake. No, that's not cake.
I don't think that show completely understood why the cake trend became a thing.
That's why
we haven't seen a season 2.
I don't remember the cake. I don't remember the cake trend at all.
It was for the best, Lori. Be less online. Don't be like me.
So I don't know. I felt like I made good use of my pandemic time.
You did.
I had a great time. I turned the taproom into a golf course. I still brewed a bunch of beer, hung out, drank beer.
Well, you had all that space. I mean,
we had to get through a lot of draft beer, so somebody was going to have to do it.
I mean, you guys really you found a great space that had plenty of room, and it was kind of a lot easier for you to ease back into having people in it, though, because people could be, I mean, I could be 10 feet apart from people and you still would end up, everybody could be 6 to 10 feet away from the next person and you still have a significant number of people in there.
Yeah. It's not like trying to do COVID distancing at the pasta tree or something like that.
Well, it's also nice that we had the garage doors and we could have this kind of really, really open air space. So that made a lot of people more comfortable easing out of it. But, you know, now we're back. You know, we had a party on Saturday. I had to leave. I was overwhelmed with the amount of people that were there. I was like, should we do a head count, Tommy? Are we going to get in trouble or what's going on here?
I mean, it does feel like, honestly, like I get just from this past weekend, James, like you were talking about, I'm getting this optimism. I don't know, this like sense of like, things are going to be busy and it's going to be okay that I felt in January, February of 2020. Cause we started in May of 2019 here in this space. we had a great summer. We had all this momentum going through the holidays and into what is a dud month or months for a lot of bars and restaurants, just staying busy. Yeah. And I don't know. I know there's like a lot of challenges in the world and a lot of people are maybe suffering and COVID cautious and all that's still, but I'm feeling a lot of optimism about 2023 here. And that feels really good to like open this space back up again. Like you said, it's a big space. We've got, I mean, we're just booking all kinds of parties, birthday parties, events, wedding showers, baby showers, and really feeling like plugged into our neighborhood again, which is really cool.
Yeah. And that changes the nature of your jobs too. I mean, when you can actually host things, you know, I mean, you guys are doing things differently and more now than you were before. Or do you have an event planner now? Like,
right. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of what we do best is like, make good beer, create a space where people can enjoy it and, you know, give people what the tools they need and the amenities that they want to have a good time in the space. And it feels like more like we're focusing on that again, instead of managing our way through all the pandemic challenges.
Yeah. So what's new? I mean, what's coming down the road?
Oh, anything? We got to talk about the Rough Draft series, James.
Yeah. So we're cranking on our pilot program now called the Rough Draft series. I mean, we have some other stuff. I mean, we can't forget to talk about Moral Luck, the German Pilsner. Which is our first lager that we've done, first Pilsner that we've done. It's good. Check it out.
But, and, you know, Pilsner is hot again. So, you know.
Yeah. Gotta love the crispy boys. That's what we love. That's what we drink. So that's what we're happy everybody's jumping on our bandwagon. But yeah, we're doing the Rough Draft series, our pilot program. This was kind of like a shower thought through the pandemic of getting rid of the old space, selling off equipment to New Barons, and then also trying to come up with a way to still be creative, not have, you know, the giant tank farm that we have of 10, 20 barrel fermenters and a 10 barrel brew house. How do we continue to make kind of smaller, more creative things? And what we did was we took 4 of the 3.5 barrel tanks from the old space and we brought them over and we piped them in and got them up and running. So now we make one batch of motherwort for 3 of the tanks. And then we let the cellarwort create 3 uniquely different beers off that motherwort. So there's some mild levels of constraints. ABV is one for the most part, and color is one for the most part. But other than that, we've made, you know, I don't know, we've made some pretty crazy things between all 3 tanks. And then we can turn out some hazies or something that we're not necessarily super interested in, you know, packaging, or maybe it's too expensive to run on a 20 barrel. But yeah, we're also doing a lot of collaborations that way. So we did a collaboration with Brass Tap and Greenfield. We've got one coming up with the Sugar Maple, actually. And then, you know, there's a laundry list of people we want to hang out with and make some Rough Draft beers with. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And well, and I don't know, I've always been kind of a little bit enamored with, for the most part, how brewers get along. I have chalked it up to being a Milwaukee thing, though, in beer. I don't know, maybe it extends beyond that. Because restaurants and chefs and people have always been very collegial. And so I don't think it was surprising to see the beer world kind of be the same way. But it gets cooler and cooler the more breweries we have to see, you know, that everybody's welcoming everybody else in. It's like, you know, Milwaukee still can't have, there aren't too many breweries. You know,
I don't think that it's just a Milwaukee thing for the brewers to hang out and know each other. I think that's everywhere I've I've been and brewed in the world, it's always a shared experience or a shared kind of understanding. Okay, yeah, what's up? You're kind of in. You're in the in crowd type for the counterculture thing. And
Whereas restaurants get a little bit more competitive.
Yeah,
in bigger markets. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of collegiality among chefs in general, but you know, Chicago folks don't, you know, play as well together as the folks in Milwaukee, for instance.
Sure. Milwaukee was a little bit behind though, for a while. Milwaukee didn't have
beer for sure.
A ton of breweries, yeah. So
I think even as much as we've grown, we're probably still behind. Like, I mean, there were cities in Florida that had like 50 breweries in them, and you're like, Florida, like who? Like, I mean, it's insane. You're like, who thinks of Florida when they think of beer? I mean, you might want to drink beer when you're in Florida, but you know. but I was sort of like, okay, this is sad. We need to up this game.
But yeah, we've got some perspective because when we started in 2013, let's say, I mean, the only breweries that I could talk to locally at the time were really like Sprecher, Lakefront, and MKE. Mm-hmm. And now there's tons of resource sharing and knowledge sharing that can happen in the city. And that's been awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been good to see. It's been very good to see.
It makes us all very happy.
Did you say happy or hoppy, Lori?
I did say hoppy.
I knew you punned it up.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, we should ask the most important question that one can ask at this point, or at any point, and no, it has nothing to do with soccer. Where can people find you guys, both in the real world and on the internet?
I mean, you can definitely find us in the tap room on the regular, drink a beer.
yes. Yeah. What's your address?
So we're at 2020 South Alice Street.
I think Google will get you there.
It's true. Yeah. But just where Bayview meets Walker's Point, and it's a really cool area. That's, I feel like going to see even more development than it has. And it's seen quite a bit in the last couple of years. And so we serve beer on site here 5 days a week, and we're also distributed throughout southern Wisconsin. So the 7-county area around Milwaukee and also out toward Madison and La Crosse, and that part of the state at, you know, some of our favorite, like bigger ones are Sendix and Woodman's and Total Wine, Pick and Saves, but also we love Rays and Autos and Discount Liquor and a lot of great independent stores out there, in cans and on draft. So bars and restaurants too. We got a lot of buddies in the city.
We're also at Enlightened Beer on Instagram and Facebook. And rumor has it Tommy's starting a TikTok. So coming soon, Tommy dancing.
Oh, boy. I'm an old man, father of two, and I don't understand TikTok.
You don't have to.
All
dance,
you have
Tommy.
To do is sassily point at words,
or truly just, you know, take sexy video of you.
I love glasses so. All day. This all started, I think, because I love pop music. And like I'm going to see Lizzo in May and I'm stoked to the max about it. Is that something that TikTok
not
generation
something that
says?
Should go
no.
on TikTok. Yeah, don't say that on TikTok.
But I love pop music and I also love dancing. So like, I don't know if I can, you know, start making some fun videos around the brewery and sharing some reels and just stuff about that world.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this. Because I'm on TikTok, so I can sort of stalk people.
We're gonna have to vet it pretty hard. I think Tommy can get out of hand pretty quick. So it'll be highly censored stuff.
I think I'm gonna need some professional help, but we'll get there. Yeah.
We'll get you a therapist soon, Tommy. Don't worry.
TikTok with the therapist. I think that'll be interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us for day drinking with us.
And for making beer that's worth day drinking.
And let me know when you guys have soccer on.
See.
I normally will pop the 11:30 game on in the tap room. So, you know, if you're looking for a beer and, you know, maybe there's a 2 o'clock game that'll come around every once in a while. The schedule gets tight.
Listen, my Wolverhampton Wanderers might get relegated. So,
and if you're lucky, Sweet Smoke is still by you. Yeah.
They've got a full schedule. Sweet Smoke. So,
if you're lucky, you can grab some barbecue while you're there.
You can't talk to me like that, Lori. I'm really hungry.
I know.
That's what we need.
Every day, James and I are talking about Sweet Smoke because. This afternoon, it was about the bologna sandwich, smoked bologna sandwich. Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, they've been in the tap room on the regular, and the food is just like so good.
Well. This is going.
You can go back and listen.
So see you on Friday.
My plans have changed.
Yeah.
For a Saturday or platter day, as we call it around here.
Oh, that's well done.
Get yourself served. Well
done. This Church is good. Of the Latter Day Saints.
Wow. We are reaching new levels of punditude that I just don't know if we should continue. Well, everyone. Let's call it a podcast. An awesome conversation. We don't get to say this very often because we've interviewed so many people over the years now, but new guests. It's been very exciting. Yeah. Not a return guest, new guest to talk to.
Yeah, new guests. Although I don't know, I can probably count it on a little more than one hand how many times we've had people back. So
that's true.
Which is pretty cool considering we've done like 170 some podcasts.
Yeah, so. it's wild. Also, I made plans already to go there and get barbecue because we didn't get to talk too much about Sweet Smoke. But I'm going to be going there to get some of that barbecue and drink some of their beer and watch some of the sports. So this has been great. I've got plans and a podcast now.
No, that's nice. No, Enlightened is great. It's one of my favorite spots. To sit. Yeah. And I don't have very many. I don't drink a ton of beer anymore. As my body has sort of decided that it doesn't like beer as much as I like beer. but I really do like beer. And so when I get the opportunity, it's one of my favorite places to go. I don't know why. It's probably partially nostalgia. Because I hung out there a lot when my husband also worked in the Lincoln warehouse. So literally every Friday for probably 3 years, almost every Friday, I sat and drank a beer at the bar and I lightened while they were there. So,
It's small walkie.
it is indeed.
So the podcast, where can people find the Food Crush podcast?
You find the podcast, but you can also find Food Crush on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. At Food Crush Pod. Where can people find you, Matt?
You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook and Twitter and, technically speaking, Instagram, but only technically. Only technically. Where can people find you, Lori? Lorelei?
And people can find me at Low Frederick, also in all of those places, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I do try to keep up with most of them.
Unlike me, who does not even attempt.
They'll say food. But anyway.
Thank you to our awesome guests. Thank you to Lori, my incredible co-host. Thank you to our awesome editors. And especially with this episode, because my dogs decided to be a little too vocal this episode. So hopefully you don't hear them, but I certainly did. And thank you most of all to you, our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening. And as always, keep cooking.